with the first pick.
And welcome back to the Daft on Draft podcast. Happy holidays. I hope everyone has enjoyed their Christmas or they're celebrating Kwanzaa, or any other denomination. I hope you enjoyed your holiday season. And of course, this is Devin Jackson, joined by my co-host, Corey Kennan. We're back to talk about prospects, talk about some recent news, some big news happening for the NFL draft world, and then a position group on the offensive side of the ball that me and you are both super excited to talk about. But first, Corey, how you doing, man? And how did you enjoy your holidays?
Yeah, it's good to be back. It's good to be back. You know, we did a lot of traveling. Well, not a lot of traveling. We went to Indianapolis, which is 3 hours from Columbus, where we live. So, but we were there for like 5 days. So it felt like we were away from home for a while. So it's good to be home. Good to be back in my natural habitat, and excited to be back kind of in the flow of things. We started back to work on Monday or Tuesday. So feels like the post time. I mean, I guess we have another short week next week with New Year's, but we're getting there, back into the regular swing of things. And now we're getting to deep into bowl season, to almost the New York Six Bowls, which we'll dive into. So we're like fully into draft season, which is just a great place to be.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. For me, it was a little bit more chaotic. We had a flight. Me and my girlfriend had a flight to Atlanta that we were supposed to board. But in Illinois, there was a big storm coming, so they canceled the flight. So we hopped in the car and split up the drive, the 11-hour drive, over 2 days. And we were able to get there. But towards the end of that first day, it was a lot of snow and it was kind of making it hard to see. So that last hour of the drive was stressful. But after that, you know, everything went pretty smoothly. And back now, and then I'm going back to Atlanta a couple of days for the college football playoff game between Ohio State and Georgia. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, a lot of traveling for the holidays, and happy to for now at least to kind of settle down and kind of regroup and get back into our NFL draft talk in this podcast. But first, some big news happened right before we started recording tonight. Kayshon Boutte originally decided that he was going to come back to school, has reversed course, and now he will be entering the 2023 NFL draft and taking his talents to the NFL after probably one of the more tumultuous, you know, situations with Boutte and LSU over the last calendar year or so, with Brian Kelly coming in. You know, he's thinking about maybe transferring. A lot of people rumor maybe he's going to Bama, decides to come back to LSU. And then Kelly in the spring talked about him and Boutte get on the same page. And then obviously you get into the season and Boutte is frustrated with how things went the first few weeks. And now, and he played well down the stretch. I will add that he did play a lot better down the stretch and they were getting him the ball. But anyway, kind of big picture look now, Corey, you hear the news. How do you think that shakes up the receiver class, for 2023?
Yeah, I still need to dive in quite a bit to the receiver class, but it's been a weird year for receivers. Again, two of the top guys that we talked about, Boutte and Jackson Smith and Jigba, both had less than ideal 2022 season. So I think we kind of gotten to a point where it just kind of feels like Quentin Johnston is kind of that wide receiver one, because he's probably one of two or three that have played outside of the slot on a large number of snaps in their college career. So at the next level, that translates to being a potential wide receiver one in X, a guy who can beat press coverage, who can win outside the numbers. But yeah, Boutte came into the season with a lot of wide receiver one hype, deservedly so, based off of his 2021 tape. And it is interesting. Again, he had decided he was going to go back to school and then decided, no, I'm good. I'm going to come out. So again, and it's just weird timing as well. So I still think he's going to get drafted, you know, probably a top. That's a great question, man. I can't, because like Addison had a great year. Smith and Jigba is still going to go really high. So where does he fall now? So that is an interesting conversation. And I'm excited to dive into the tape and kind of see where I fall with that. But again, he did end the season well with 100 yards on 6 catches and a touchdown against Georgia. So that's a good way to go out. But yeah, it'll be really interesting. 7 catches against Alabama, 6 against Florida for 100, over 100. So, I mean, he does have some good numbers against top tier SEC teams. So I think he's got that going for his favor. It will be interesting to see how it shakes out after a less than ideal season, I would say.
For sure. And I think a lot of people are going to ask, you know, about maybe some of the off field stuff, how he was, you know, with inside of the team, especially early on that season when things were going LSU's way. But, you know, like you say, you put up some really good numbers and some good tape down the stretch of the season. So it'll be interesting as well for my end to dive into that. But that was really all the only big news happening, you know, with bowl season kind of slowly trickling along. A lot of games that I don't want to say weren't super memorable, but not a lot of top tier competition happening. But as we get closer and we'll finish off the episode with this, we'll talk about the impending college football playoffs that are happening this weekend. You know, and some players will be watching for that. But today is all about the big men on the end of the line of scrimmage today, and that is the tight end group in the 2023 class. At the very top, we know the name at the top of the list and should be on everyone's top of the list down at Notre Dame. But we're here to both of us switch off and talk about who our top five tight ends are at this time of kind of the process. Obviously, we're still watching a lot of these guys, still trying to see if some of these guys are going to declare and go ahead and make their allegiance known to the NFL. But I would say probably a lot of this list, a large portion of this list are upperclassmen. So there's not going to be a lot of redshirt sophomores in here and whatnot. But first, I'll let you start off, Corey. And I think we'll go reverse order here, 5-1. So for you, who's the number five guy right now for you in the tight end room?
Yeah, for me, that's going to be Sam Laporta out of Iowa. So Laporta's an interesting dude. He was kind of in an odd situation where that Iowa offense is anemic, and he's the best playmaker on that Iowa offense. And so they were like throwing him screens. Like his yards per target is way low. Dot is way low. So I think he has the potential to kind of develop beyond what he was the NFL level that, relative to what he was in 2022 for Iowa. But when I watch Laporta, you know, I see an average athlete. I think he's a good receiver. He's got really nice hands, an average blocker. There's just a lot about Laporta's game that's, to me, is average. And to me, that screams that guy's going to be a tight end too at the next level who, and again, that's fine. NFL teams are running a lot of 12 personnel. 12 personnel is the most efficient personnel grouping to throw the football out of. Teams are going to run a lot of 12, so there's nothing wrong with being a tight end too at the next level. That's just kind of where I am at with Laporta, is just, you know, a good solid player, but like he doesn't have a trait that blows me away or a trait that separates him that makes me say, oh, that's going to elevate him at the next level, outside of, oh, he's going to get some scheme looks where he's going to be, you know, a backside target or he's going to be a second option on a boot or something like that where he's going to just be open and, you know. So yeah, five for me is Laporta.
Yeah, for sure. So for my, and I'll give a little notes before I go into my number five, because I watched Laporta as well, a couple games on him. And I saw a lot of the same things and wrote down a lot of the same things as well. I think for him, I see a guy that, you know, I see some explosiveness, you know, out of his stance and being able to get off the ball quickly. Then you see him kind of throughout a route. There's really nothing, I wouldn't say there's anything special at the top of the route. I think he does a nice job staying square and breaking down and providing himself a nice target. One thing I had a question about with him was, especially like in the trenches and blocking, was some of his length. I thought he wasn't a super lengthy guy, like, you know, kind of, I want to say he didn't have long enough arms, but it wasn't anything special. I saw a lot of times he was kind of getting pushed around a little bit, and you know, defenders were you know, knocking down his hands and kind of replacing their hands. And I just didn't think in those one-on-one situations he fared well a ton. And to me, like I said, I also think he's a tight end too. One of those type move tight ends. He did a lot of work on outside zone and being able to move bodies, like on a moving target. But when it came to one-on-one blocking, it was something that I kind of struggled with him. He actually just missed my top fives because my number five tight end is Cameron Latu from Alabama. So one thing kind of a little bit of background with him. He originally came to Alabama as a defensive prospect. He was, I believe, a defensive end coming out of high school. And he's great length. I think he's like 6'5", 245, 250, really nice soft hands. And to me, one of the things I really enjoyed about him was his ability to create some separation at the top of routes. He did a really nice job on dig routes. There was a one play against LSU where he completely lost the defender at the top of the route, caught the ball, and was able to get another 10, 15 yards. So I was very impressed with what he brought in that table. And there's a couple of nice blocks he made as well in the trenches. I don't think he's a guy that kind of sticks in the trenches. I think he's more of that kind of split out tight end, more of a, kind of a hybrid type tight end where he's not going to be in line in a ton of snaps. You line him up, you can line up in the slot. Kind of put him in that wing back, situation, kind of move him around a little bit as well as a move tight end. But I did see some ability to stretch the seam vertically, be able to create some separation at the top of the route, on dig routes, especially, and be able to root out some defenders as a kind of an insert player on some inside run. So for me, Cameron Latu checked in at number five. I thought he was a really solid player. And I think for me, he's probably, I would have him probably in that late round three, early round four area, depending on what his testing is. But I trim more as a day three guy for me.
Yeah, I like Latu's ability to block. I don't, I, yeah, I do wonder the levels of the field that he can win at. And he's got some ball security issues throughout his time. Like he's fumbled a football each of the past two seasons. And I think his drop percentage is at like, he's charted at 12% over the past two seasons. So 12% of his targets have kind of hit the turf. And so I have some concerns, but I have no, again, this tight end class is top heavy when you get through like the top, three or four. But after that, it's definitely up for debate. Jumping to my number four. I'm going to go to the guy out of Utah, which this guy, Dalton Kincaid, I was interested in a couple years ago when he was tearing it up at the FCS level playing for San Diego, transferred to Utah during the COVID year and didn't play hardly at all in 2020. Hardly played, burst onto the scene late last year with the Utes and then completely took over this year. So when we're talking about Dalton Kincaid's production, it's hard to find a more productive tight end in the nation than Dalton Kincaid. Again, he outproduced Michael Mayer this season. Again, racked up 70 catches, 890 yards, and 8 touchdowns for the Utes. Again, he is a fifth-year senior, so he's a little bit older because again, it took him a little bit of time when he transferred from the FCS to the FBS level to kind of find his ground for the Utes. But again, he's got nearly 34-inch arms, and it shows with his catch radius, absolutely wild catch radius, some of the strongest hands, some of the best body control of a tight end in the class. Just watching him, that USC tape where he puts up a clinic of over 200 yards receiving is insane. Some of the catches he's making on the field along the boundary, in tight windows, some of the most secure hands in the class, wide receiver or tight end, just unbelievably soft and strong hands. He's a good route runner too. But I think what I appreciate most about Kincaid, again, he's not a burner. He can eat up space between him and a guy in off man pretty well. But what I appreciate him most about him most is his ability to be versatile. Again, he's more of a big slot than a traditional inline tight end. Like nobody's going to use this guy as a traditional inline tight end. He's not a good blocker. That's not where he's going to win. But you're going to be able to create mismatches in the passing game with this guy. He's going to beat safeties and linebackers. You're going to have to adjust for Dalton Kincaid. And again, he will catch everything that is thrown his way. So, just a tremendous talent. And I've got Kincaid right now at like a probably a high third. So top 70-ish to top 75 range, I think is a good range for Dalton Kincaid to come off the board, by the time the draft rolls around.
Yeah, and I want to preface this by saying I'm pretty sure we have the top four same guys. So
Probably.
these names are going to be a little bit interchangeable. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Kincaid, and we talked about him like early on, right after I want to say towards the end of last year when he was really starting to ramp up and make some big noise. With Brant Keithy there, he got a lot of the attention, but he's really Kincaid is really. Emerge as a top target, but I have someone a little bit different at number four, because I have Kincaid a little bit higher up on my list. But number four for me, is Darnell Washington from Georgia. And for me, four through two was incredibly difficult because each guy brought a little bit something different for, in terms of skill set, in terms of versatility and usage. And for Georgia's Darnell Washington, dude is massive. First of all, just absolute incredible size. And to me, I don't think they play similar at all between, I don't want to say similar at all, but I don't think they play similar, but the size is certainly astounding with Jelani Woods and Darnell Washington. And it'll be an interesting debate because I know some people have already made the argument that Washington should be tight end one. But for me, as we talked about a little bit the other day, Washington was a guy that I kept seeing him on other people's film. Like I'm watching like Vanderbilt against Georgia. I'm watching Kentucky. Watching Florida. I'm watching all these SEC teams. Tennessee. Trying to defend him, and there's really no answer. Really a guy that I don't think he moves as well laterally as you would like, but he's just a bully. He's someone you get the ball too quickly, get him in jump ball situations, have him run up the seam, and throw the ball up to him. He's that type of guy where you just find a way to get him ball, the ball. He's a big target over the middle of the field. I don't think there's a lot of refinement yet in terms of technicalities with route running, sticking at the top of routes, but he's nasty in the trenches. He's someone that's going to finish through the whistle. Someone that is just so hard to defend. And I'm really interested to see how Ohio State's going to find a way to kind of keep him under wraps because really, I mean, he's playing alongside Brock Bowers and it just doesn't feel fair. You have Bowers who is going to be the tight end one next year. And you have Washington that, kind of is an afterthought, but he's made so many impact plays. He's jumping over dudes. The athleticism is just crazy. But for me, I think because of, what kind of separates, starting to separate these guys, it's just some of the nuances of route running, some of the nuances of blocking. Like, I think for him, like, there's a lot of times where he just out overpowers dudes. And that's great, but you got to keep those hands inside. You got to continue to move those feet and continue to drive. And I think those small things, if he continues to build on those, he can be a tight end one at the next level and really become a cornerstone piece for NFL team. For me, I think he right now, I would probably have him early round three, just because I think some of the I want to see how we test laterally, when we're doing the kind of the short shuttle and the 10-yard burst. I want to see that as well because I don't think he's overly fast, but I think he's one of those build to speed type of dudes. But I'm very, very intrigued to see kind of how the NFL are taking these type guys. Jelani Woods was taken, I want to say, towards the end of round three last year. So, how far up, how far, or I guess how high are teams willing to take him, depending on what how he moves laterally in those drills and whatnot. But I think just the talent and the body type alone, it warrants a top 75 pick for him.
Yeah, I think that's a good place. I'll hit my note on Washington when I get to him, obviously. But I think you mentioned something about like you would feel comfortable top of round three, and that's where I would feel comfortable with Washington as well. All these next, three for me until we get to Mayer, obviously, which we're building up to, are all like the margin between them is not steep. It's not steep. So I think you hit the nail on the head where I'm seeing Washington mocked in first rounds of mock drafts, like 26 overall, Titans, like for And that's to me, that's way rich. That's way rich. Especially for a guy with the target volume that he's gotten in his career, like the huge, huge projection. But again, I'll hit the rest of my notes of Washington when we get there. For me, moving to the tight end three from I'm moving to the FCS level, following in Dallas Goedert's footsteps out of Dakota State. Tucker Kraft, man. I really like Tucker Kraft. Again, I would probably put him in that fringe second, third round range as well. But man, he's a fun player, and it stinks that he got early on in the season, and so his tape's a little limited this year. But I think he's runs some pretty decent routes. I think he's got a pretty decent route tree. One thing I did notice about his routes as well is he's got a throttle. He's got a second gear as well, which is not common to see among tight ends, for the most part. So he does have that second gear he can throttle to, which is nice. He terrorizes down the seam. He's a monster down the seam. And they'll leave their own little slip screen, little bubble screens, just to get him the ball in space as much as possible as well. And he's pretty good after the catch. He's not he's an athletic dude. So Kraft is my tight end three. And another underrated thing about him is he's a nasty blocker. Like he's a good blocker. He's willing to go out and do the things. I watched the game against Montana State, this most recent game, and the first series alone, he did like three different things that I like checked off in a row. I was like, oh, that's just the first series. Like he first play of the game lined up as fullback, as an H back, pile drives the guy into the ground. First play of the game. Second play of the game, they throw him a bubble screen. Third play of the game, or third play of the drive, same drive, he hits the seam for a touchdown, deep ball up the seam for a touchdown. It's just like this guy did everything for South Dakota State, everything that was asked of him, and he's pretty well rounded. He's a well rounded tight end who has the ceiling of being a tight end one. I think early on he's going to be a tight end two. Again, you want to use that guy as a move piece. You want to move him around quite a bit because he can do a lot of things. But I do think he has the ceiling of a tight end one, and so I really like the game of Tucker Kraft.
Yeah, I will talk about Kraft here in a little bit, but yeah, I'm big fan. Saw him or watched him play in the last year's playoffs, FCS playoffs. I was like, who is this number 85 dude? Like they threw him a tunnel screen. I was like, okay, and he broke like three tackles, stiff
He
arm.
housed it, didn't he?
He almost did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
And
crazy.
he's listed at a full 6'5", 255 too. So he's not like these 6'2", 6'3" tight ends like move. He's 6'5", 255.
Yeah, it's insane. But like I said, I'll get to him in a second. Dalton Kincaid is my number three guy. And for a lot of the reasons you said, I mean, ability to play above the rim. The subtle nuances at the top of the route too is not just with, him, catching passes over dudes. They're moving them all over the place. They're splitting them out, single receiver formation in the boundary. These running slants and running corner routes and going up top and making plays. He's also getting his nose in there and blocking as well. Now, I don't think he's the most refined blocker, but he gets the job done. I think there's a play or two where he's on the backside of a run and he's climbing to get the front side linebacker. And I think that type of effort and ability to work to get to that, first of all, I mean, that's an incredible landmark. To begin with, to get to a lot of backside tackles can't even do that. But I just see a lot of the effort. I see a lot of the ability to really make an impact, not only as a contested catcher, but over the middle of the field, create after the catch. I think there's really all that there with Kincaid, and he put it all together this year. Had a lot of flashes in the 2021 season. Played really well in the Rose Bowl last year too, but he really put it all together this year. Became one of the top weapons for Utah, and I expect him to have a big game to kind of stamp his career against Penn State in this year's Rose Bowl. So Kincaid is my tight end three.
Yeah, I've already hit on Kincaid. Yeah, I'm a big fan. Like NFL, like Darren Waller can't block either, and he's the top tier tight end because he creates in the passing game. So I think Kincaid's gonna find an early role, man. I really like him. On to tight end two already. All right, so he was your tight end four, my tight end two. That's a pretty big difference. But again, when I mentioned like my tight end four through two are very microscopic in difference. Like on my grading scale, I graded out Darnell Washington at 7.925, which is a very high third rounder. Eight is gets him in the second round range. Tucker Kraft graded out as a 7.9. So separated by 0.025 between Kraft and Washington. Again, he is my tight end two. I would not take him as high as people are mocking him. Again, the dude has had 40 targets on the season. That's it. Just 40 targets. Like, how do you project that to becoming a first round pick, a guy who can consistently produce? But on those small targets, he did a lot of really nice things. So he only dropped two passes on 40 targets. Two passes, that's negligible. It's fine, whatever. Massive, massive mitts, strong hands, plucks the ball out of the air, massive catch radius, 6'7", 280. Like, this dude's a monster. And a lot of the things you hit on, he's nasty. He's a bully. If there, I don't know if there's a meaner player in college football than Darnell Washington. And that's not conjecture. That's not like hyperbole. Like, pound for pound, like, boy positions. Sure, you could go find a defensive tackle who weighs 350 pounds and say, oh, I bet this guy's meaner. Like, pound for pound, I don't think there's anybody meaner than Darnell Washington in college football. And again, they did a lot of things where they'd split him out in the slot, out wide, you know, in line. He can kind of do it all. And he's the best blocking tight end in the class. Like, hands down, the best blocking tight end in the class. I don't think that's that. I don't see how another tight end even comes close compared to him. You know, like, unless there's like a Co-Keith who's like a blocking specialist and is all he does hiding somewhere, like he was last year out of Minnesota. But like, yeah. So for me, I see the pathway where I can say, okay, I can see the skill set of Darnell Washington being a tight end one. I can see the pathway for Darnell Washington being a three down tight end. And that's enough for me to stick him at tight end. Again, I think he's going to test really well in, you know, those more linear explosive drills, like the vertical jump, like the broad jump. I think the 40 will be interesting because I'm with you. He's kind of in that the old Treylon Burks where it's that back 20 where he's going to fly and not so much the first 10 yard split. So that'll be interesting. But I, again, with you, I'm interested in his lateral movement because he's very stiff. He is very linear. He's very stiff. But he still does a lot of those things well, even though he's stiff. Like, he's clearly explosive. So, because he's hurdling dudes out there at 6'7", 280. So, a pathway for Darnell Washington to be a full-time tight end, where he can kind of take on more than 40 targets in a season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to it's going to be a fascinating debate, I think. Just, you know, because there's going to be people that make the argument he's tight end one in this class, but I it'll be interesting to see a discourse around him, because I know around Jelani Woods there was quite a varying opinions, and he's making an impact already as a rookie with the Colts. So it'll be interesting to see with that type of body type and style of play how people land on him. Number two for me is Tucker Kraft. And usually I'm not super always super high on these FCS guys. Like, there were some FCS guys that hit my top 10 last year and in some of the rankings. You know, like obviously like Pierre Strong and some of those big name FCS dudes. But I just can't stop the kind of the infatuation with Kraft, because like they're like giving him jet sweeps and they're like doing all these creative stuff with him, and he's you know producing. And like you said, I'm sad that he got hurt early this season. But to me, I believe he's a redshirt junior. He's one of the younger tight end prospects we had in quite some time. And nonetheless, from the FCS level, I just love just the way he plays. You know, like how the offensive coordinator used him at South Dakota State, how he can be a guy up the seam, someone that, you know, catches slants, they go to him on third and fourth downs. Every team knew that he was getting the ball, and he still produces. And to me, I think that kind of speaks volumes of how good of a player he is. And the blocking too, I think there are some things you clean up technically wise, but he's a nasty blocker in the trenches. He's someone that you can pull across the line of scrimmage, and have him do things like that. You can have him double team with the tackle. So many different things you can do with him. And to me, kind of the versatility part of his game is what kind of put him over the edge over like Kincaid and Washington. Just the ability and what he's able to do with the ball in his hands, I think is special. And to me, that makes him tight end two for me.
He is a true fourth year player, so I do wonder if he did graduate, you know, if he's graduating now or if he graduated this month, if he's going to be down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. He hasn't gotten an invite yet, or I don't see an invite yet that he's accepted, but I do wonder. And another thing to consider before we move off of Kraft and move on to Michael Mayer, where we're both building up to, he had offers to transfer up into the SEC, offers pay him a lot of money to do it, and he said, "No, I'm staying here." So I think that's worth mentioning as well with Kraft, is that he had the chance to transfer to a big time SEC program and said, "No, I'm good. I'm gonna finish what I started here." And so that's definitely admirable and worth mentioning, because that's going to come up in meetings with NFL teams as well. Like, NFL teams care about that stuff.
Now we move to the number one tight end on both of our lists here. Someone that has been kind of been the next guy that people have called Baby Gronk. That it seems like every other year we're doing this, but might actually kind of live up to that. But we'll see. But number one on my list and your list, Michael Mayer from Notre Dame. I think it's clear that he's the best tight end in this class, just because like what he's able to do at any given time in a game. I mean, you need him to win up the seam. You know, he can do it. You throw it to him short on a shallow route, he's able to break a few tackles, score. There's really nothing he can't do for the Notre Dame offense. He was the top target on that offense, and teams knew it. You know, they loaded up to stop him. Ohio State did a pretty good job of containing him, but pretty much every game after that, he made some noise, and he did it in a big way. And there's really nothing you could do. You try to cover him one on one with a linebacker, he just runs past him. You try to put him one on one with the safety, he just, you know, uses his big frame to kind of shield you. And to me, one thing I wrote down about, you know, his route running is intelligent route running. He's not a blazer. You know, he's not like a 4-4 guy. You know, he's not a, you know, I think he, I wouldn't call him a necessarily a freak prospect, but in terms of what he's able to do, the subtleness at the top of the routes, you know, he's able to create separation. He creates throwing lanes, by the timing, the kind of the deception, his ability to avoid, you know, those attempted jams or they try to reroute him. He knows it's coming, and you can tell every route that he runs is intentional. You know, it's not any wasted movement. You know, he gets to where his spot that he needs to get at a reasonable time, and he has such a wide frame and big target to throw to. It's all impressive. I think it can't be overstated enough that, you know, I would take this guy at the back end of the first round, you know, and not feel bad about it. And to me, you know, we couldn't really say that about last year's class, but you know, this year you have that guy that is certainly a worthy round one prospect. So Mayer for me was a no-brainer for tight end one.
Yeah, it's truly a no-brainer. It's truly a no-brainer. Again, people are trying. I've seen some Darnell Washington tight end one takes, and I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I mean, I don't see it at all. I mean, Michael Mayer is fluid at his size. So 6'5", 250, and that dude sinks his hips so well. He's such a crisp route runner. He gets in and out of his breaks. Pretty diverse route tree from a multitude of alignments. Like, it's a no-brainer to me. It's an easy decision to say Michael Mayer is easily the best tight end in this class. No issue taking him first round. Yeah, and you mentioned all of the refinement things. I jotted that stuff down too. Dude wipes hands so well at the top of routes, you know, knocking hands off when he's trying to work downfield. Knows how to I think it's Benjamin Solak who says always create offensive or always commit offensive pass interference, and he knows how to do that subtly at the top of routes, giving a little elbow at the hands at the top of routes. But he's a king at creating cushions at the top of his routes. He's a king of giving his quarterback a clean target to throw to. Excellent hands. Like, what's the knock on this guy that he's not an elite blocker? Like, okay, like there's like three tight ends in the NFL that are. Like, I don't care. Like, this guy's easily tight end one. Easily tight end one. So I'm with you there 100% the whole way, all the way down, all the way down. tight end one.
Yeah, really, really phenomenal ability, and only watched a couple of games and just knew immediately. To me, I went back just to watch the Ohio State game, and honestly, there were plays where he was open and they just didn't look at him backside, or they didn't get to his progression, but he was still open in that game, and they did a pretty good job containing him. So wanted to add that note as well. Let's talk about a few players that missed the cut on this list. One being Luke Musgrave from both of us, a notable omission. And I'll let you go first. What about Musgrave that kind of made you or made him miss your top five list?
Yeah, so kind of in the same boat as Washington. Washington has a full body of work, though. Like the target share throughout his career isn't there. And those first two games, he was getting fed targets. So it's really disappointing that he got hurt after week two, because he was truly getting those targets that we've all been looking for. But with Musgrave, he's long. He's very long. But he doesn't sink his hips as well as some of these other longer dudes do. So I think he's a little lanky, and I think it shows up when he tries to sink his hips and get out of breaks. So I think it takes him an added step or two to get out of his breaks, compared to a guy like Mayer who's fluid and seamlessly gets in and out of his breaks, which is just so rare. And I also just think he's kind of soft. So I don't think he deals with physicality well, whether that's working off the line of scrimmage, working at the top of his route, working down the field. I feel like he got bumped off his path quite a bit, and without a lot of effort. So, and it shows up in his ability to block as well. I don't think he's a great blocker by any means either. So he's bigger, and I don't think, again, his hips don't sink well, so I don't think he can win with leverage as a blocker very, very well. And so defenders get into his chest pretty easily, and when that happens, especially when you're trying to block defensive ends, like it doesn't go well for Musgrave. For Musgrave, though, I think he can stride it out with the best of them. I think he can really stride it out down the field and separate deep down the field. So again, he'll find a role at the NFL level, but he just didn't make the cut in my top five. I think I put a fourth round grade on him. So I mean, he's gonna go top 120, top 125, and maybe even higher. We'll see if he's healthy enough to test, since his injury week two. That would be ideal. But yeah, Musgrave's the guy for me that just missed the cut.
Yeah, Musgrave missed a cut for me, and it just really came down to kind of the body of work and sample size, and I think his blocking is a little overstated, compared to what people are saying about his ability. And I don't think blocking is like as big as it used to be for tight ends,
It's really not.
where you have to be able to block. But for me, I think he's that type of player that is probably going to hang more in the trenches, and I would like to just see a little bit better base, a little bit better ability to kind of climb to the second level and just some more consistency. Oregon State as a whole, they ran a very, I would say, very kind of comparable type of NFL system or college system that kind of translates to NFL level. So I think there won't be a humongous learning curve for him. A lot of those concepts are, kind of ingrained in the NFL offenses. So I think he'll have that ability where maybe he's a Daniel Bellinger type of guy where he comes in and kind of makes an impact immediately. Doesn't put up huge numbers, but can pick up the offense pretty quickly. I kind of see him in kind of that light a little bit, in terms of what he can bring, kind of more of that, I won't say traditional, but tight ends we've kind of accustomed to seeing being like a tight end too. So I think Musgrave is going to find a role at the NFL level, but just missed my top five. And like I said earlier, Sam Laporta as well. Just worry a little bit about his size. I think he certainly has a skill set to also be a impact NFL level guy, but I worry a little bit about his size compared to some of those other dudes on the list. But nonetheless, I think he's NFL talent for sure.
Zach out of Old Dominion's worth mentioning as well. Penn State transfer to Old Dominion was having a phenomenal season, but also suffered a season-ending injury. He's also going to be 24 pretty soon after getting drafted, a month after getting drafted. So he's a little bit of an older guy as well. And then some day three guys that we didn't get to. Josh Wiley out of Cincinnati has had hype for a few years now, but production has kind of dropped off each of the last two seasons after a really strong 2020. 2020 campaign. And so, you know, what Josh Wiley's worth bringing up. Luke Schoonmaker has some fans out of Michigan. Payne Durham out of Purdue both have fans. Again, it's a lot of older dudes who, you know, are benefiting that COVID year. A lot of fifth, 6 year seniors in this Titan class who are pushing 23, 24 years old before they're even drafted. So, but yeah, I think that's going to do it for the tight end talk. And it's worth mentioning today as well that Brenton Strange just declared out of Penn State. So Brenton Strange is a guy that you probably didn't watch. I didn't watch because I had no idea he was going to declare. I would have told you he was like 100%. And then there's another guy out of Stanford and Ben Jurasek who hasn't made up his decision as well. So again, some of this stuff can change. Combine still has to happen. Somebody could go out and completely bomb at the combine, or somebody could be like Jelani Woods and completely blow it up and just test as a freak at every single drill. So again, these aren't solid. These aren't in stone and pen. Again, there's some players who might declare, but I think that's a pretty good place to for now for both Devin and I.
Yeah, Wiley is a good name you brought up. I liked him a little bit a couple of years ago, but now we're a couple of years later, you know, and it's just funny that some of these guys have now come in full circle, you know, the COVID year, the extra COVID year, and kind of helps too. Thought Wiley should have declared last year, but that's just me. I'll dive back into the tape and see what I saw, see you know what he did this year, but yeah, that's a great name. Brenton Strange, I think, is going to be an interesting one, because he's just tough as hell and makes a lot of contested catches and on a lot of poorly thrown balls from Sean Clifford. So that will be interesting to watch too. And he kind of staved off Theo Johnson at Penn State, so I think that says something. You know, able to still be on the field and become a main contributor for that Penn State offense. So very interested to take a look at his film and see what we see what I think of him at the very least. Final thing we're gonna do before we wrap up this podcast: college football playoffs this weekend. You got Georgia and Ohio State playing in the Peach Bowl, quote unquote, in one of the college football playoffs. That's in the second game. The first game is TCU in Michigan, I believe, is down at in Arizona. First of all, very excited to have the college football playoff here and ready to go. And we'll do one prospect from each game that you're looking forward to most. So I'll let you start, Corey, on TCU and Michigan. Who's the one prospect either that you're looking forward to seeing or think needs a big game?
Yeah, I'm going to go. It's not one prospect, but I'm going to go with the TCU running backs, both Kendra Miller and Zach Evans. So Michigan's got a pretty strong defensive line. You know, Mozzie Smith, Mike Morris, they've got dudes who can play in their interior. So rush lanes might be a little limited. How are their eyes going to test? You know, how it's a good test on their eyes if their primary read is closing up, how they can cut off. How their secondary eyes are working once they get through that first level. Both dynamic running backs. So I'm going to go with Kim Miller and Zach Evans and how they fare against that Michigan front.
For sure. One player that I'm looking forward to seeing is Michigan cornerback DJ Turner. He's going to get a healthy test this weekend against Quinn Johnston. And I want to see how he's matches up with him, one. And two, you know, kind of how much are they going to put him on him? Are they going to allow him to follow? Or are they going to kind of play their base defense and just whenever he lines up against him, just let him be? So I'm very interested to see Turner. I haven't watched a ton of his film, kind of in passing, but he's made some impressive plays and has some twitch to him. So I want to see how he fares against Johnston, who seems to be trending towards a wide receiver one. And then we'll go to the second game. Between Ohio State and Georgia, the one guy I'm watching is DeJuan Jones from Ohio State, the right tackle. I think this could be a resume type of game for him. And, you know, Georgia doesn't have their top edge rusher, you know, in Nolan Smith playing, but I think it's going to be a terrific test to see how he handles the speed and power and kind of the blend, a mix of pass rushes that Georgia throws at a team. I want to see how he deals with both and being there in person. I'll definitely be keeping a close eye on him. As you know, a team like maybe the Eagles look at him as a potential Lane Johnson replacement, especially with him dealing with a core muscle injury right now. So I'm very interested to see, you know, how he's going to handle that physicality of Georgia's defense and the stunts they throw out. They throw a lot of stunts. They move around a lot. They move around the defensive lineman. He may have some reps against Jalen Carter. So I'm very intrigued to see how he fares in this game.
Man, that's such a good. It's hard to pick one from this Ohio State Georgia game because I mean, it's a good matchup between TCU and Michigan, but this Ohio State Georgia game is star studded, like across the board, every position. You can be like, that's an NFL guy, that's an NFL guy, that's an NFL guy. So it's hard to pick one. And so like, it's hard. Like, I want to say like Broderick Jones. I think Broderick Jones got kind of whipped by BJ Ojulari in the SEC championship game. Got two more good pass rushers coming against Ohio State, but. I mean, I can't leave here without talking about CJ Stroud. Like, I think a little bit of the shine's kind of worn off of CJ Stroud. You know, it's been a long season, and it's, you know, the typical Ohio State quarterback pre-draft stuff, and he's probably deserved a bit of it. He hasn't been very good outside of structure. He hasn't been very good under pressure. Like, he's 0-2 versus Michigan. I think those things kind of matter to NFL teams, and so I think CJ Stroud. You know, now he's being talked about in Will's Will. Better than him? Is Anthony Richardson better than him? Which I think is too far. I mean, everything's different, but I think that's too far. Like, yeah, I get Bryce Young, but he's got a real chance to make a statement here and say, listen, man, I'm still CJ Stroud. Like, I'm still the guy that was the QB1 of the offseason all over the place, who was being mocked in the top five all over the place and still is throughout the season, but like has a chance to say, like, what are we doing here? I'm still a really good quarterback. So Georgia's defense is the best in the nation. So he's got a chance to really put some shine back on his name that's kind of worn off as this long season gone along.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I think at this point, there's a large portion of people putting Will Levis over CJ Stroud at the very moment. So that I think having a big game, certainly against Georgia's defense, and obviously the talk will be about Marvin Harrison Jr. versus Kelee Ringo, the interior of Ohio State's offensive line dealing with Jalen Carter. But Stroud seems like he's kind of becoming a, I don't want to say underrated, but kind of under talked about storyline in this game. He's clearly the better quarterback between the two in this game. But, you know, I think the play on the field is going to matter most. And this is going to be the film they throw up in about 2 or 3 months when they're having meetings with him. And, you know, and I know some teams like to, you know, kind of talk about, you know, plays in that particular game. So I think it's going to be big for his stock and, you know, and what he's able to do. But I think, you know, just in general, I think this game is going to be a lot closer than people think. I think a lot of people are expecting Georgia to kind of roll over Ohio State. But I mean, even in that Ohio State Michigan loss, Ohio State was right there in the fourth quarter, in the beginning of the fourth quarter, and some missed opportunities, and that game is completely different. So I think this is going to be a fascinating game to watch this weekend, and see, you know, like you said, a star-studded. So see all the stars shine and see what they can do under the bright lights in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta.
It will, and that's going to be a fun game. Again, it starts every position. You can have a guy that's gonna get drafted in either 2023 or 2024. I mean, I could have pointed out again Broderick Jones versus Zach Harrison and JTT. I could have done Luke Whipler against Jalen Carter. Like everywhere there's matchups. Like I want to watch that. Kaleb Ringo against Marvin Harrison Jr. Like it's just gonna be across the board so much fun. But yeah, that's it for now. By the time we come back next week, we'll know what the national championship pairing is. We'll have. I think we're going to do cornerbacks coming up next week. So we'll have some cornerbacks scouted and ready to discuss some corners. But again, as far as tight ends, we discussed six or seven names for people to dive into and give some takes on. So it's been a long, fun episode. And again, it's great to be back and have a podcast to talk draft weekly. It's been something I dearly missed. And I couldn't have a co-pilot along the way and having to talk about that. But until next week, Corey, and this is Devin and Daft on Draft Podcast.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.